Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
As promised, we are continuing from last week where we did chapter 90. Today we're going to do chapter 91, which, thank God, is a very different tone than in some of the previous weeks, a lot more upbeat. Next week is the Thursday before Rosh Hashanah, so we will be having class.
We will.
And we'll be doing, right before the shofar blowing, read a Perek of Tehillim seven times, like rapid fire. So we're going to do that chapter of Tehillim so that we understand and appreciate it as we say it 14 times over the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, today's chapter should be familiar to many people because it is said quite frequently. We say it on Shabbos mornings. Mm-hmm. We say it on Motzei Shabbos, as we transition from the weekday from Shabbos into the weekday, and we say it at a levaya, we say it at a funeral, as we escort the body to the grave. And again, we're going to wonder why we say it at those particular times. Most notably, is you'll notice that this is a chapter Tehillim that should be said in unknown situations, when there is somewhat of fear of the unknown, when there's a transition taking place, and you're uncertain a little bit about the transition. And in that case, a lot of the times that we say this makes a lot of sense. For example, Saturday night, Motzei Shabbos, as we're transitioning from the high of Shabbos into the uncertainty of the week, so we say this chapter of Tehillim at a funeral. What greater transition is there than a funeral? So we say it at a funeral. We say it at Kriyat Shema Lamita. We say it at night as we go to bed. And again, we're transitioning from the daytime to the nighttime. And you'll notice that theme of nighttime, of transition, of this journey that's taking place, the song of a journey that's taking place. All of those are kind of the undertones to the chapter that we are talking about today. Who wrote the chapter? Who's the chapter written for? So the answer is it's a little bit unclear. There's no Mizmor LeDavid or anything like that. It is uncredited. And yet Chazal tell us that this is one of the 11 chapters that we discussed last week that's written by Moshe Rabbeinu. So it could be written by Moshe Rabbeinu. You'll see as we read the chapter, it could very easily have been written by Yaakov Avinu or for Yaakov Avinu. And obviously, like all chapters of Tehillim, it's written for us. And it's our job to find our own personal voice in the words of the chapter of Tehillim. So while at least the Radak, and bless you, and many other Meforshim, there are tissues there, many of the other Meforshim. First of all, I appreciate, I empathize, I am a multiple sneezer in the office, they laugh at me, so you're good. I'd have like 19 more in me at this point. Even though the Radak and many of the Meforshim say this was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, most notably as he's climbing the mountain to go and to receive the Torah from Hashem. Again, for us, we'll have to find our own voice in this chapter of Tehillim. I'll suggest mine, and ultimately, you can all find yours. All right, so let's dive right in. Pasuk Aleph. Yoshev b'seisir elyon b'tzel shaddai yislonan. So Yoshev b'seisir elyon, one who dwells under the shelter of Elyon, of Apai. B'tzel shaddai yislonan. In the tzel, what's a tzel?
Shadow.
In the shadow of Hashem, Yislonan, I shall rest. So one of the things you notice immediately from Pasuk Aleph, and again, to me, this really sets the tone for the entire chapter, is where are we right now? Where are we right now? Yoshev b'seisir elyon, one who dwells in the shelter of Elyon. Elyon, what does the word Elyon mean?
Hashem?
Well, translate it to literally.
High.
High. Above. Now contrast that with a different chapter of Tehillim that we're also going to say next week quite frequently, and that is chapter Kuf Lamed, where we say, Shir Amalos Mi Ma'amakim Krasich Hashem, where I call to you from the depths. Here, where are we calling to Hashem? Where are we starting? Where's our starting position? Elyon. We're starting up high. So that in and of itself, I think, triggers a certain association in our minds that whereas certain chapters of Tehillim, we start from the depths, right? And we've certainly studied a lot of those, where you start when you're in a quote-unquote bad place, when you're feeling in a low place. This chapter of Tehillim, at least from my perspective, is Yoshev b'seisir elyon. We are sitting elyon, right? And if you think about even the imagery of Moshe Rabbeinu climbing the mountain, when Moshe Rabbeinu is climbing the mountain, what does he feel at that moment? So if you pause the chapter and you put yourself in Moshe Rabbeinu's shoes, What are you emotionally experiencing at that moment in time? So on the one hand, you are literally climbing the mountain to God, which means you feel an incredible closeness to Hashem. And on the other hand, with that incredible closeness to Hashem, comes a little bit uncertainty of what's involved in that. What does that mean for me? What does it mean to feel that level of closeness to Hashem? But at least the starting point is a very high point. And again, I think that's going to shape a lot of our discussions this chapter. So Yoshe B'Seser Elyon, you're sitting under the shelter of the Elyon of Hashem who's up high. B'Tzel Shaddai Sonan, and you're resting under the shadow of Hashem. The shadow is something we're going to come back to. But a shadow does what? A shadow mimics my actions, right? So that's the way we relate to Hashem. And specifically, say many of the, I'll say Rishonim, the early, you know, philosophical commentaries. So why specifically are we related to as a tzel here? Is God related to as a shadow? That there is a tit for tat, so to speak, in our relationship with Emunah. The more Emunah, the more faith we put in Hashem, the more divine providence Hashem will shower us with. There's a direct correlation to my belief in Hashem, and therefore Hashem's relationship to me. That's the tzel. That is the notion of a shadow. The same way when I move a certain way, my shadow follows me. And if I move the opposite way, my shadow will follow me there. So too in our relationship with Hashem, if I move in a certain direction, if I go in a certain path, so Hashem will follow me, and Hashem will relate to me in that path as well. Of course, where do we refer to Hashem most notably as the tzel, as the shadow? That sukkahs. The sukkah is referred to as Sela Demnamnusa. It's the shadow of Emunah. That's the sukkah, right? The sukkah, the walls are kind of inconsequential. It's the schach. It's what's on top of us that makes a big difference. What does the schach need to have? It's a big tumult now because the CRC is causing trouble for everybody. Where the CRC came out this year and said, remember last year and 2 years ago where we said you could go to Home Depot and buy schach from them? Well, we don't recommend it this year. And then everyone went crazy. And then the CRC said, no, if you bought it previously, you could still use it. Why do we not endorse it anymore? Because if you had gotten the Home Depot schach, so you'll notice that it's very flimsy. And what I mean by it's very flimsy is it separates very easily. And all of a sudden, while your sukkah is supposed to be mostly shaded, all of a sudden it's mostly sun now. The shade is the most important part of the sukkah. That's why sukkah comes from the word schach. Right? The schach is the most important part of the sukkah. That's Chazal say, the tzela demnehemnusa. It's the shade of Hashem. That's why shade plays such a prominent role in our sukkah. So that's what the tzel, it's the shade of Hashem when we talk about Emunah. And again, we're going to come back to that idea. Okay, so we're sitting under the shelter of the Elyon, B'tzel Shaddai Yislonan. This is kind of the introductory statement. We were, in literary terms, we would say, if we were writing a poem right now, we would say this is the narrator, right? Stating a fact. Now, you'll notice as the chapter progresses, there are multiple voices that the chapter is describing, and our job is to navigate that and to figure out what exactly we're talking about. Okay? Pasuk number 2. Omar Ladonai, I say Ladonai, I say of Hashem or to Hashem, Machzi umesudasi. You are my refuge and you are my fortress. Elohai Eftach Bo. Right? The God in whom I trust. Okay? Now, Pasagimel, Kihu Yatzilcha mipachyakush midevaravos, because he saves you from the animal's trap. Midevaravos, and from pestilence. In other words, things that I know about and things that I don't know about. An animal's trap, by definition, means the animal doesn't know about it. If the animal knows about it, he escapes the trap. The trap means that it's jumping on you. It means you're walking along your merry way, and all of a sudden, bam, out of nowhere, it comes and gets you. Right? So we're talking about things that are affecting us, both that we know about, and that which surprises us. Right? Midevaravos. When you are afflicted with, let's say, a cold or the flu, do you know that it's coming upon you? Well, sometimes you have that little thing in your throat and you know it's coming. But most often than not, like right? What?
Hits you like a bomb.
Right, you're sitting there 1 second, the next second, all of a sudden you're not feeling good and whatever, right? So these are things that both we expect and things that we don't expect. What you notice immediately in the transition between verses 2 and verse 3 is, again, this who's speaking? Omar Laranai Machsi Umitsudasi. That's who's speaking? Machsi umesudasi means I am speaking, or you are speaking, right? An individual is speaking. Then, if you go to verse 3, who's speaking? It's ki yatzil cha. It's you. In other words, if verse 2 is in the first person, in verse 1 was in the third person, right? It's talking in generic terms about someone who believes in God. Then verse 3 all of a sudden is in the second person. So again, pretend I'm the narrator of this chapter of Tehillim. So verse 2 is me saying, God, you are my refuge, you are my fortress. And then it says, if I'm saying to you, or you're saying back to me, ki hu yitzilcha, yeah, you're right, God will save you. And so what many of the Mefarshim describe here is that there's a conversation taking place. There's a conversation taking place. Again, you can choose your words. It could be between a student and a teacher, between a young child and an older person, right? Someone who's more youthful, someone who has more wisdom. Whatever imagery you want, let's go with a teacher and student for now, okay? So verse number 2 is the student making a proclamation. Amar l'Adonai, I say, of Hashem, machsi u'mesudasi, that he is my refuge, he is my fortress, and therefore I'm going to have belief in him. And then it's as if the teacher's coming back to me in affirming that which I said. And that's basically going to happen from verses 3 through 8. Ki hu yatzilcha, you're right, because he will save you from the animal's trap and from pestilence and things that will afflict you. Be'evraso yesech lach, on your wings he will protect you, right? He will cover you. V'tachas k'nafav techaseh, and he will, again, he will protect you, he'll shield, sina, again, he will, I'm sorry, v'tachas k'nafav techaseh, he will provide you with a refuge under his wings, sina v'socher amito, that your faith in him will be like a shield around you. Now again, you notice immediately what imagery is being used. Wings. Wings mean, where are you? You're not Mimam Akim, you're not in the depths, but you're flying. Right? So this is a chapter where we are flying high. And while we're flying high, we feel that sense of protection from Hashem. That our amito, that our faith in Hashem, is the tzin of its ochera. That in and of itself is what protects us. So again, in verse number 2, I make a declaration. I am going to believe in Hashem, and I believe that He's my fortress and He is my refuge. And you come back to me and you say, yeah. And if you believe in Hashem, here are the positives that are going to happen as a result. Ki yatzilcha, He'll save you, He'll protect you on His wings, He'll hide you under the wings. Sina v'tzocher amito, it'll be like a shield for you. Pasuk number 5, lo sira mipachad laila, you have nothing to fear at nighttime, mechetz ya'uf yomam, or from a flying arrow during the day. In other words, no matter what, life is going to hit you with, right? They're throwing everything at you, the arrows, the nighttime, which is usually, again, as we've discussed, a time of anxiety, a time of unknown, a time of uncertainty. Chazal, at least, the Gemara in Brachos talks about this in the context of demons, right? Something that we don't understand, but the Gemara is explicit that there are these demonic forces. What that means nowadays is a different calculation. But that's one of the things that, at least when we say it at night, when we say this chapter of Tehillim, Chazal tell us that it's to save us from whatever forces surrounding us, whatever negative influence is surrounding us. But again, that's the lo sira mipacha laila. I'm not going to fear nighttime. Nighttime, as we discussed, is when a person is generally alone and they are exposed to the elements. And there's a fear in that exposure. But I'm not going to be afraid. And mechetz ya'uf yomam, even an arrow in the daytime, when I know it's coming at me, right? Nighttime, you don't know what's lurking because it's dark. Daytime, you know it's coming right at you. The arrow's right at you. But mechetz ya'uf yomam, I have nothing to worry even of the arrow flying to me during the day. Midever ba'ofel ya'aloch miketev yachut sarayim. Again, the plague, the destruction. I'm not fearing any of this. Yipol mitzidcha elef urvavamim necha. 1,000 people will fall beside me. Urvavamim necha. Thousands to my right side. But eilecha lo yigash. You're telling me, but none of it is going to impact you. So you almost envision this chaotic scene, right? People dropping left and right, arrows flying, demons lurking, right? And eilecha lo yigash. There's tranquility. and there's peace surrounding me. And again, this is the chizuk. This is the strength that you're giving me. I made my declaration in verse number 2 that basically Omar Lanai said of Hashem that he's my fortress and my refuge, and you're coming back and you're reaffirming all of that. Rak beinecha tabit vishulumas rishayim tireh. What's rak beinecha tamit? You're going to see it all with your eyes. In other words, while this chaos is surrounding you, just watch. Right? Sit back and watch the show. Where do we see this? Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Jewish people are panicking, right? They imagine standing at the edge of Palmetto Park Road, where you have the Atlantic Ocean on one end, and Egyptians charging at you down Palmetto on the other end, and all of a sudden you're panicking, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hisyatzvu uru'u asishu as Hashem. Right? Don't worry about it. Hisyatzvu, stand back and watch Hashem's salvation. That's what you have here. Rak beinecha tabit vishulumas rishayim tira, and you'll see the destruction of all of the wicked people. That's, I'd say, section number 1. If you had to follow the structure, okay, again, there was verse number 1, which was kind of that, the narrator's talking about being under Hashem's protective wings, or under his protective influences. Then you had verse 2, which was me talking, right, first person, machsi umitsudasi, I am talking about myself. And then someone is responding to me. Kihu yatzilcha. Someone's responding to me and saying, yeah, he will protect you. And not only is he going to protect you, but he's going to do all these amazing things to you. Disease, plague, destruction, demons, arrows, pestilence, traps. Whatever it is that you're afraid of, Hashem is going to protect you of it. Now you'll notice verse 9. Ki ata Adonai machsi. Because you, Hashem, are Machsi, you are my refuge. And where do we know that word from? Because it appeared in verse number 2. It's the exact same terminology, right? You, Hashem, are my refuge. Elyon, samta meonecha. Right? Elyon, on top, you are my meonecha, you are my haven. Okay? Right, as we learned in last week's chapter. Right, Tefillah Moshe, Adonai Ma'on. Right, God, you are my haven. Lo se'une elecha ra'a. No evil will befall you. V'nega lo yikra ba'alecha. And no disease, no plague will come into your tent. What do you notice immediately? You notice that in verse number 9, we shifted back voices. If 2 through 8 was someone responding, it was in the second person, you, all of a sudden in 9, who's it talking about again? Machsi. Machsi is what person? Me. It's personal. It's first person. So all of a sudden in verse 9, I come back to Ki Atadonai Machsi. Hashem, you are my refuge. Elyon Samta Monecha. Up high, I have placed the haven. Right? Monecha. Hashem, you are my haven. So all of a sudden, we go back to first person. And then in verse 10, what do we do back? Lo suna elecha. You go right back to second person. Vinega lo yikrav bo'alecha. And disease will not befall your tent. Ki malachav yitzaveh lach. Because angels will escort you. Lishmorcha b'chol drachecha. To guide you along your way. To guard you along your way. So again, you see that exact same imagery play out. Al kapayim isa'uncha pentigof be'even raglecha. Al kapayim, they're going to lift you up, these angels. Right? They're going to lift you up with your hands. Pentigof be'even raglecha, so that no stones hit your feet. There are two ways to carry a person. Right? If you think about an eagle. So an eagle can carry you on the bottom, in which case you are still exposed. Or an eagle could carry you on the top, where the arrow would hit them and completely protect you. So pentigope even raglecha, if it's not even hitting my feet, where am I in respect to the eagle? I'm on top. So I'm completely protected. Okay? Al kshachal v'fesen tidroch tirmos kefir v'sanin. I'm trampling over all of these animals. If I'm trampling over all these animals, so what am I doing? You're like almost, you're like riding above it. Right? So again, there's that imagery of elevation. Let's pause there for a second. what almost every single commentary points out is that there's two parts, two very distinct parts to this chapter of Tehillim. And if you even take a pen, so let's draw it out. Verse number one is the narrator. Yoshe b'seisrael yom etzel shaddai sonah. It's telling us a fact. He who dwells on high under God's protection. Verse number two, we said, is who speaking?
First person.
It's first person. It's me speaking. Verses 3 through 8 is who speaking?
Second.
It's someone speaking to me. It's the teacher responding to the student. Then you came to verse 9, where it transitioned back to the first person. Ki ata Adonai machzi. For you, Hashem, I'm speaking directly to Hashem. You are my refuge. God is my haven. Then, in verses 10 through 13, what exactly happens? It's again the teacher responding to the student. So you have two parts to this chapter of Tehillim, and they're directly parallel in structure, one to another. Both start in first person, transition to second person. Both, I didn't notice this because I'm not like this, but someone I saw this pointed out, both have exactly 56 words.
Oh, okay.
Both have exactly 56 words.
Oh, no.
Both verses 2 and 9 speak of Emunah and Hashem. Right? In verse 2, I said of Hashem, you are my refuge, and you are my, here it translates it as stronghold, you are my mitsudasi, you're my fortress. Right? In verse 9 is, God, you are my refuge, that exact same. So we're speaking about Hashem as that, again, picture the imagery of a refuge. It's when the world is chaotic. You go into your safe place, your quiet place, right? For many of us, I guess. Right? No. I guess for those who have children or when your grandchildren come. So sometimes you just like, you need a, you know, like sometimes you spend a, sometimes you spend a little extra in the bathroom even though you don't really need to be because it's the quietest room in the house. Right? Okay, we could all admit we've done that at various points of our parenting or grandparenting, right? Because you need like a door locked. You need a place where no one's going to bother you for 5 minutes to finish a thought. So that's exactly, I mean, but that's exactly the refuge, right? It's when there's chaos all around you and you just need to like lock the door for 2 seconds because you need to breathe for a second. Okay, so both speak of that element of Emunah and Hashem. That when the world is chaos, what belief in Hashem does is it gives me that menucha. It gives me that menucha sanefesh. It gives me that tranquility. It gives me that sense of serenity. And yet, you'll notice that despite all of the comparisons between Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Tet, verses 2 and verse 9, what is the fundamental difference between them? There's one glaring difference. And that is as follows. Let's read the words and translate them as literally as we can. Amar ladonai machsi umisudasi. Omar. What does Omar ladonai mean? It's a good translation. I say of Hashem. Right? I'm like talking about Hashem. Okay? Now talking about Hashem means that I'm here, you're there, God is some like amorphous existential entity, and I'm talking about God, right? Like I heard there's this entity called God, and it's great if you put your moon on him because he's your refuge and he's your stronghold. Verse 9 is what? Ki ata. It's referring to Hashem, directly to Hashem. Mm-hmm. And when I talk directly to Hashem, I use a little bit of chutzpah, actually. Because what do I say? Ki ata Adonai, you Hashem, machzi. You are my refuge. Which means I'm almost giving Hashem a directive. Like I'm commanding Hashem. In verse 2, I'm referencing like I heard about Hashem. It's almost like Yisro. When he comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and he says, I heard about all the miracles that Hashem created. Right? And it inspired Yisro. Verse number 9 is a very different tone. It's much more
personal,
much more personal. You're speaking to Hashem directly. And in your direct conversation to Hashem, you're almost like giving Hashem a commandment. Machsi, Hashem, you are my machsi. You do that when you have an elevated level of confidence in the person's ability to deliver about that. There's a difference between me telling someone, you know, I heard that you have the ability to do something. Okay, that's like, that's cute. You heard from someone else that I have the ability to do something. But if I look you in the eye and say, you can do it. So there's a totally different tone to the, what?
There's one thing to say it, nothing to feel it.
There's one thing to say it, nothing to feel it, exactly. So when I say it, it's like I heard. There's like a rumor out there. But if I say you can do it, it's me because I believe in every fiber of my being that you can do it. That's the difference between verses 2 and 9. Okay, so we know we have two parts to this chapter of Tehillim. We know they follow the exact same structure, and yet we know that 9, the person is at like a different place in his relationship with Hashem than he is in verse number 2. And that's really the entire flow of this chapter of Tehillim. It's all good. It's all describing the positives, the benefits of Emunah and Hashem, and how Emunah and Hashem doesn't mean, as we've talked about in the past, that you walk around very meekly and your head down and your hands like this and you're very pious and you can't interact with people. No, Emunah and Hashem says the chapter of Tehillim, again, Moshe Rabbeinu Yaakov, we'll see why I keep on referencing Yaakov, right? It provides benefits. It means that when the world is chaotic around you, and we see this in our day and age, you don't need to look very far. The world is chaotic. The challenges of the world are chaotic. Those who live an unbelieving life are not doing as well as they aspire to do. And again, we've referenced this with David Brooks's book and certain statistics, that all the things that modern society has been striving for, of this notion of individuality and this notion of uniqueness, it hasn't necessarily done society so good. And we live in a crazy world. The bombardment of news, social media, comparison, you're constantly being compared. You're always comparing the worst of yourself to the best of others, right? This unrelenting bombardment of information, which is afflicting us and our children. I mean, it's just, we live in an insane world. And so what Emunah is supposed to be, right, what we aspire for it to be, is this protective refuge. It's that safe house. It's that room in your house where you can go and lock your door and find, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, your whole day, again, whatever level we're on, but a few moments where we feel that confidence of that Emunah in Hashem. And the proof is the striking difference between verses 3 through 8 and 10 through 13. In 3 through 8, what are the dangers that befall us? What are the dangers that befall us? So there's...
nature.
Well, right, so there's definitely natural things. Right, there's pestle, there's plague, there's disease, there's arrows, there's terror.
Darkness.
Now, all of those things are what? They're real.
Right.
The arrow's flying at you, but what happens at the last second? Almost like God comes out and he catches the bullet for you. In verses 10 through 13, what happens? Let's just read 10 for a second. Lo se'une elecha ra'a. Means what?
No
harm's going to fall you at all. V'nega lo yikrav bo alecha. In disease, lo yikrav. The translation you have means it will not touch. But yikrav, if we were translating without that in front of us, how would we translate it? Wouldn't even come close to you. Wouldn't even come close to you. Right? Why? Ki malachav yitzav alach l'shmorachav b'chol d'racha. Because the angels are... the wings, right? They're going to lift you up on the wings, which means all of the craziness and insanity and dangers that are lurking here, you're going to be flying above it. It's not even, right? It's not even going to be impacting you whatsoever. Okay? Al shachal v'fesen tidroch kinroz kefir v'sanin, chapter, verse 13. What is the word? Tidroch, right? You're going to tread. Treading means that while like an... again, for those who know, I have a deep-seated love of dogs. That's sarcastic, right?
Very.
Like, I don't know. There are many things I'd rather be confronted with than a dog, okay? So, but when like a dog is lurking at you, you don't want to be on the same playing field as the dog, right? Where do you want to be?
Away.
You want to be on top, where the dog can't reach you, right? That's the imagery of Tidroch. You're treading above. So you picture that like Moskowitz is at the top of a tree, and a dog is at the bottom of the tree, and it's like, right? And it's like jumping up to get you. But I got nothing to fear. Why? Because I'm at the top. And then the only thing you're like, can the dog really jump this high? I'll tell you a funny story. When Ariel and I were dating, so it was probably like our third or fourth date, I made the mistake of going to Central Park at night. So we're like walking in Central Park. Right. So Central Park at night is basically anyone in New York who has a dog, and your apartment in New York is the size of this table. You need to get your dog out, so you bring him to Central Park at night. That is a bad place for me to be. So the whole time, I'm like cowering behind her, like trying, and finally, it was like not reflecting well upon my manliness. So I had to make a quick, you know, shift to plan B, and we went out to dinner, I think, after that. But that went from a very inexpensive date to a very expensive date, but it was all to avoid, anything to avoid the dogs, right? So that's the imagery. She still married me, despite that. Well, I learned afterwards that however afraid of dogs I am, she shares that. We share a love of a hatred of dogs. I have a neighbor who's very considerate in, you know, there are two types of dog owners. I'll go on a little bit of a, there's a type of dog owner that understands that not everyone loves dogs. And so when someone comes over who might be afraid of dogs, you keep them on a leash and you might put them away because you understand there's a sensitivity. And then there are insensitive people that that when you come over, they're like, oh, don't worry. You know, and you have like a cast on your arm because the dog bit you 2 days ago. Don't worry, they don't bite. They're really lovely. They're friendly. They're really friendly. So I'll just put it this way. There are people in the community that invite my family for Shabbos, and they understand that we're petrified of dogs. And so they when they invite us, they say, don't worry, we'll put the dog away, we're giving the neighbor, whatever. And then they're the type of people that'll come over to me and say, Rabbi, we really feel bad we haven't had you in 10 years, but you know, we have a dog, and when it comes to the difference between hosting you or having to put our dog in a room for an hour, the dog is more important. So better, 100%, better luck next time. Anyways, okay. So now that Moskowitz had a little bit of therapy about his fear of dogs. What you see here, though, is that the difference in Pasuk 2 verses 9 is represented in the difference between 3 and 8 and 10 and 12. In verse number 2, the Emunah in Hashem is I heard. Like I heard that, I went to a class about Emunah in Hashem. I heard that Emunah in Hashem is a good thing. And when you feel that there are benefits of that, that's 3 through 8. That even knowing and believing intellectually, cognitively, in the benefits, the priority of having an Emunah in Hashem, so that's Yatzilcha Mipach Yakush, that's Losira Mipachad Laila, don't fear, right? That's all the beautiful things. But when you transition to verse number 9, when it's personal now, when you're not talking about Emunah, but you're feeling Emunah, right? When we say Vayaminu Ba'Hashem Uve Moshe Avdo, the word Emunah, in the way we talk about it all the time, doesn't really appear in the Torah. Right, Vayaminu Ba'Hashem is one of the first and only, right? Avram Avinu is also referred to as someone who had Emunah. But when it says Vayaminu Ba'Hashem, they believed in Hashem. It's not that they believed cognitively in Hashem at that moment. Right? Why does the Torah use the word Emunah in that instant? Because there was that like extreme closeness to Hashem. Don't forget, they had just been saved from Egypt. They're standing at the gazebo at the end of Palmetto Park Road with the ocean on one end and the Egyptians on the other end. And God performs this amazing miracle. They're not talking about God's miracles at that moment in time. They feel Hashem's presence. They feel that Emunah in Hashem. And so in verse 9, when you feel in every fiber of your being that connection to Hashem, then the level of protection is elevated. Then it's lo sunah lechara. Then it's lo yikra ba'alech. It's not even going to come close to you. That's when the angels are going to lift you up and allow you to transcend any difficulties, any challenges that might befall us. And so what this entire chapter of Tehillim is teaching us are the blessings and the guarantees of someone who has Emunah in Hashem, the benefits, the very real benefits of someone who has Emunah in Hashem, and it also describes varying degrees of Emunah in Hashem. It's a process. It's a progression that when we first start off, we might not be at verse 9, we might be in verse number 2, where I went to a class about Emunah, I know about Emunah, I've heard about Emunah, and there are benefits to that. That's part of the journey. But by verse number 9, by Pasuk number 9, when you come to a level where Emunah isn't just intellectual, it's not outside of you, but it's part of you, it's something you feel, something you live with, then it takes on a whole new level. Rabbi Goldberg and I were talking yesterday, and it was like a challenge. And both of us looked at each other, and we're like, we talk about Emunah a lot. We should probably have Emunah right now, right? And again, what we were basically acknowledging is that every one of us feels what this chapter of Tehillim is referring to, which is that at various points in your life, sometimes you're going to be a verse 2 type of person, and sometimes you're going to feel like a verse number 9 type of person, right? It's all good. It's varying degrees of goodness, okay? And that's kind of the progression. Now, in verse number 14, Pasuk Yadalit, is Hashem comes into the picture. And now, it's Hashem talking. Ki vi chashak ve'afalteu. What's chashak? Cheshek? Like a desire, a want. Ki vi chashak, because you wanted me, now Hashem is responding to us. Because you put your emuna in me, because you desired me, afalteu, I will deliver you. Asagvehu ki adashmi. I will elevate you, right? I will elevate you. Ki adashmi. Here it says safe. Again, elevate, safety. Because yadashmi. Yada here does not mean an intellectual knowledge. How is the word yada used in Tanakh? Ve'adam yada et chava. It's the greatest form of intimacy, right? The greatest form of intimacy. Ki adashmi. Again, it's not an intellectual knowledge. It's because we have a relationship now, Hashem says. Ki vi chashak, because you wanted me, that's why I'll deliver you. That's that yatzilcha. That's Hashem is our shadow. If we relate to Hashem in a certain way, then Hashem will relate back to us in a certain way. That's the mida keneged mida. That's, so to speak, the tit for tat that we refer to in Judaism. Right? Ki vi chashak ve'afalteu asagveu ki adashmi. Pasuk 15, Yikra'eni ve'anehu, because you called out to me, ve'anehu, I will answer you. Imo anochi betzara, I am with you in your time of needs. Achaltsehu ve'achabdehu. Achaltsehu means hotza, like I will take you out. I will rescue you. Ve'achabdehu means I will honor you. I will elevate you. Orech yamim asbiehu, I will satiate you with long days, ve'areu b'shuasi, and I will show you my salvation. A few notes about these last few psukim. Number one is verse number 15. You'll notice that Hashem does two things. First, he says, yikra'eni ve'aneu. If you call out to me, I'll answer you. But then he says, imo anochi betzara, I am with you in tzara, achaltzeu ve'achabdeu. I will rescue you, and I will honor you. The Slonim Rebbe points out that whereas the Tanakh puts a comma after the word bitzara, if you read it a little bit differently, then this pasuk has beautiful interpretation. Yikra'eni, when I call out to you, connotes what type of relationship do you and I have? Right? We talked about this in the past. If I'm calling out to you, am I close to you or far away from you?
Far
away, right? It's like giving a sermon in the Rand Sanctuary. I got to call out to the guy in the back. I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, because you're far away from me. Okay? So Yikra'eni, Hashem says, if you call out to me, if you feel distance from me, and yet you call out to me, Eneu, I'll answer you, because you're still calling out. But Hashem says, if you feel, Imo Anochi Betzara, if you feel that I am with you in your time of tzaras, if I'm with you in your time of need, in other words, that you're not calling me from afar, but rather that you and I are close together, then not only am I just going to answer you, but I'm going to do a lot more than that. I'm going to achaltsehu ve'achabdehu. I am going to rescue you, and achabdehu means I'm going to honor you. Honor is very different than answer. Right? When you call out to Hashem, most of us would be satisfied with just being answered. But Hashem says, if you feel that closeness, if you feel imo anochi betzara, if you feel that I'm with you in your most difficult times, then I'm not only going to answer you, but I'm going to do a lot more. And so says the Slonim Rebbe that this Pasuk 15 is talking about two ways that we can relate to Hashem. One is we can call out to Hashem, and that's a beautiful thing, and it's not minimizing it. But when you call out to Hashem, there's a distance. I'm here, Hashem is there. Hashem is going to answer you. Okay, the same way if you call someone on a phone, they'll pick up the phone. And while they might be able to answer your question or give you comfort, there's still a, there's a distance. It's like paying a Shiva call over a phone. I hate it. I know I have to do it because people oftentimes sit Shiva outside of Boca, but it's like incomparable. It's an ichy experience. First of all, it's hard. You can't gauge the tone. You don't know what type. You know, you walk into a Shiva house, you could very easily judge the circumstances pretty quickly, right? Does the person want to laugh? Do they want to cry? Do they want a serious rabbi? Do they want I always tell people that's the number one job of a rabbi is just being able to read rooms very quickly, certainly at a Shiva house. No, I mean, that's really what it is. When you walk in after someone lost a loved one, certainly in a circumstance where you didn't know the person very well, which oftentimes will happen, so you just have to read the situation very quickly, okay? On a phone, when you pay a Shiva call over a phone, that's impossible. You don't know whether the person was just telling a funny story or a sad story. You don't know if they've just been crying for the last 2 hours and they're, right? It's very hard. But Ukraini, I could call a person over the phone and they'll answer it and we'll have a conversation. But Imo Anochi Betzara, you can't compare that to sitting next to a person and putting your hand on another person and looking them in the eye and having them feel your presence and you feel their presence. So that's the relationship that Hashem is describing here, says the Slonim Rebbe. Ukraini Veneu, if you call out to me, I'll answer you. But if you feel Imo Anochi Betzara, if you feel that I'm with you, then that relationship will produce a lot more than just an answer to your questions. It'll produce achaltsehu and achabdehu. And that's ultimately what we strive for, not just to be calling out to Hashem, but we strive for that notion of imo anochi betzara. You'll notice in the last pasuk, we refer to orech yamim aspiehu. Hashem says, I will satiate you, right, from soveya, achalta v'savata, I'm saturated, I'm satiated. What's orech yamim? Again, coming back to... Right, it's a length of days. Doesn't guarantee us long life. It guarantees us full and complete days. Right? Full and complete days, which is what we discussed last week. That's ultimately the most that we can do. We don't know how long we live, but we can fill our days with meaning and with purpose. And lastly, there's a beautiful comment of the Malbim. The Malbim says here something that perhaps you were thinking, and perhaps I was thinking. He says, "Lama lo yisu al kapayim bal yikra b'makom sakana." Why do we need this entire chapter? Why does Hashem have to say, "You should know that there's danger lurking everywhere, and if you have emun on me, I'll protect you"? Why can't we just have a relationship with Hashem that says, "I'm going to protect you, I'm going to love you"? Right? Why does it need to be predicated on danger? It's as if Hashem is scaring us and scaring us into having emun in Him. So why does it have to be that way? V'lama yanichehu b'makum shechal v'fesen u'mazikin. Why does Hashem place us in a world that has so many mazikin? Again, dangers can mean everything to different people right now. It could, right? Danger can come in a lot of forms. Okay? Danger can come naturally, right? A hurricane can be danger. Danger can come from illness. Danger can come from, you know, I was once somewhere for Yom Kippur, and the rabbi got up. This was many years ago, before we were really, as a society, aware and cognizant of the dangers. But a rabbi got up and said, who here's child has a computer in their room? No, first he says, who would allow a rabid dog in your child's room? Now, this was his words, not mine. So no one raises their hands. He goes, who here allows a computer in your child's room with unfettered internet access? And like the entire room raises their hands. He says, if you are allowing a computer in your child's room with unfettered internet access, you might as well be allowing a rabid dog in the room. It's right? The that's how dangerous it is, yeah?
It's like the foxhole syndrome.
But no atheist in a foxhole. Right. So the point is, mazik and dangers can take any number of forms. So says the Malbim, why does Hashem put us in the world where there's so much danger, and that danger scares us into amunah, so to speak? He says, Shezeh yiyeh, shel yedei yikra'eni bitzara. Malbim says it's a fact, and we know this, that it's a lot easier to dive into Hashem when you need something than when everything is good. The Torah tells it to us. Torah tells us in countless places that will come a time when everything will be good, and when things will be good, we'll start getting a little relaxed, right, and a little self-confident, and a little arrogant, and we'll say, kochi ve'otzim yadi asali esachai al hazeh, it was my efforts and my hands, and I'm in control. And when we do that, bad things happen, right? But when things are difficult sometimes, so it's a lot easier to daven to Hashem. Even historically, we know this to be true. The greatest times of Jewish scholarship were not in moments of peace and security and tranquility. Right. It was in the most difficult moments in Jewish history. We talk about the Balei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Tam. They were running away from pogroms and crusades the whole time. Right? So in 20th century America, when we've had relative peace and security, I mean, in America, right? And we've had religious freedom. So what has that freedom given us necessarily? Has that brought us closer to Hashem, right? When for the first time in Jewish history, we were given the choice of whether to be Jewish or not, right? We were always forced to be Jewish because our enemies hated us. And your neighbor always reminded you you were different. All of a sudden, we come to America and we had religious choice. And what did Jews choose? En masse, right? Most chose out. I mean, just look at statistically. So says the Malbim, that Hashem says it's a sad fact, but because you'll call out to me in difficulty, you'll daven to me, that's when you're going to feel me. That's when you're going to remember me. There's no atheist in the foxhole, right? It's when the bullets are flying around you. It's when the world is so chaotic. That's when you're going to remember me. Ma she'in came. As opposed to him, lo yeh b'makom sakana klal. If everything is good, Hashem says, people are very quick to forget me. Lo yikara elai, they don't call out to me. V'gam lo yasig b'chush Hashem imo ki yitla kol b'teva. They associate everything as nature. It's nature, it's natural, that it's my job, it's my work, it's because I put in a couple of hours at work that my parnas is doing well. So Hashem says, the Malbim says it's a sad truth, that we oftentimes relate to Hashem better in times of tzaras. Now, obviously, what's the antidote to that? The antidote to that is, and that's really the theme of this entire chapter of Tehillim, is that if we want to avoid those pitfalls, if we want to avoid the sakana, if we want to avoid the mazikin, if we want to avoid the dangers altogether, what should we do? Daven to Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu's teaching us is there are two ways to come to Hashem. One is because Hashem put the rabid dog at your door, and you're panicking, and so you say, Hashem, I really need a favor right now. Hashem, I really need you right now. Or we could just have emunah in Hashem and daven to Hashem and feel Hashem's presence and say to Hashem, Hashem, you could save the dangers. I'm going to believe in you nonetheless. I'm going to have emunah in you even when things are good. And if I daven to you and I call out to you and I have emunah to you even when things are good, then says the Malbim, what don't we need? We don't need the dangers. We don't need the mazikin. We don't need those dark things lurking at our door. So what is this chapter about? Chapter is about, right, not being in the depths, but we're on the heights. We're at a really good, right, Moshe Rabbeinu. We're climbing the mountain. We feel good about our relationship with Hashem, right? We are so high, and we feel so special, and we feel such a connection to Hashem. And all this chapter is doing us is teaching us that Hashem doesn't only catch us when we're at the bottom. Right? That's Shir Malas Mimamakim. That's those moments when we feel so low. But it's not just that Hashem catches us on the bottom, but it's that Hashem elevates us when we're at the top. We say this as we transition from Shabbos into the weekday. Why? Because when we go from Shabbos to weekday, so we're taking the high of Shabbos. We're not at a low point right then. We are flying high. And it's at that moment that we say, Hashem, that's when I'm putting my emunah in you. Hashem, because I'm on your wings, so protect me in whatever dangers are lurking throughout the week. Okay? Hashem doesn't just catch us on the bottom, but he lifts us up even when we are at the top. The Malbim we saw today, the beautiful idea that either we can relate to Hashem as calling out in those moments of difficulty, or we can just have emunah in Hashem and basically tell Hashem, Hashem, you can save all the problems because I'm going to have emunah in you even during the good times. We saw the beautiful idea by the Slonim Rebbe about Yikra'eni Ve'enehu, that if we call out to Hashem, he'll answer us. We're distanced from Hashem. But ultimately, our goal is Imo Anochi V'tzara, to feel Hashem, to feel that closeness, that intimacy, Ki Adashmi, that we know his name, again, knowing not in a distanced way, but knowing in the most intimate way possible. this chapter is about the antidote to the last chapter, right? The last week's chapter was not always so positive, right? This week's chapter is very positive, I believe. And this week's chapter, again, is telling us the blessings and the guarantees of living a life of Emunah Hashem.